although I'm not here to represent the State of California Department of Voc Rehab, I'm here to represent California Council of the Blind, and Christy happens to be working at State Patton State Hospital as a social worker. So basically what we want to talk today are two things. Becoming a student is the focus, but then I also want to talk about social skills. But a lot of times, individuals who are coming out of high school seem to be in the process of headed for a community college. And it's very, very important that students coming out of high school really need to look at their skills, especially in mobility skills. And, of course, you look at their typing skills, computer skills, and their Braille skills if they're needing to use Braille. And look at their reading skills, making sure that they are capable of listening to text material and not depending on their vision to handle some of the text material. I'm getting a lot of low vision individuals coming out of high school who are still using large print, which is okay because I did when I was in high school. However, my vision has not changed since. But sometimes we have people with retinitis pigmentosa, Stargardt's disease, diabetes, or many of the other disabling myopia, high myopia, and other conditions of the eye that are progressively deteriorating their vision. And you really have to think about that. Unfortunately, the schools don't look at that. They just want to get the person educated and graduated and out into the system. And then, of course, they have Department of Voc Rehab take over after that. That tends to be the problem with what a lot of rehab counselors have to deal with, because a lot of the students are not ready for college. And I highly, highly recommend, even though if you have good Braille skills, you might have some good mobility skills, you might have some good computer skills, but I highly recommend to polish those skills by attending one of our training centers. We have the Orientation Center for the Blind in Northern California. That's our state center. Then we have the Hadland Center in San Pablo. And then, of course, we have the Blindness Support Services in Riverside. And then we have the Davidson Program for Independence in Los Angeles. We have those programs for individuals who really could use polishing and or learning new skills that they may have not picked up in high school. And it's vital, extremely vital, that these individuals go to one of those training centers just to get the skills they need to compete in the community college. Now, when they do enter college, you do have to have some good mobility, because that's really critical that you know how to navigate that campus. So that's why it's really good to get those skills. Now, if you're later on in life and lose your vision, of course, that's going to be a different skill set, and you're going to have to go to one of these training centers. And I know of many people who lose their vision in midlife. And fortunately, you know, that they have had vision to understand their environment. However, it's real important that they try to attend these centers. Now, if you have children, that makes it a little more complicated. And the Department of Voc Rehab can help with home training and help you with some of these skills. However, that can take a little bit longer. And what I find is that individuals who do that kind of training tend to maybe, meet with a Braille teacher once a week, but don't do anything with a Braille and wait for the Braille teacher to come the next week. And then the Braille teacher has to start all over again because they didn't practice. And that's the same with the mobility, and the same with the typing computer skills. So if anybody is planning to do that kind of training, you have to dedicate yourself. You have to tell your kids or your spouse or whoever you're living with that you have to put that time aside to learn these skills. Because if you are planning to go to a community college or enter into employment, you have to have those skills that are necessary. Christy, do you want to add to that?
Well, I think what I'd like to do is know who's in here.
We'll start the... Okay.
Hi, this is Richard Retha for the Junior Blind.
Hi, my name is Chris Fendrick. I'm a teacher of the visually impaired at the Kern High School District, also a member of the Greater Bakersfield Chapter of Council of the Blind.
Hello, my name is Kelly Hill, and I am a member of the Active Blind Inland Valleys Chapter in Riverside, and I do teach at Blindness Support Services Incorporated in Riverside. Teach computer skills and Braille.
My name is Amanda Winkler, and I belong to Active Blind Inland Valleys Chapter.
My name is Robin Adams, and I belong to the Orange County CCB Chapter in Anaheim.
My name is Cam Schur. I'm a member at large. I live on the Monterey Peninsula.
Anybody else? You're okay. That's it. All right. Go ahead.
All right. So, unfortunately, it doesn't seem like we have students in here. Pardon? Okay, good. One of the things that I would like to suggest, there are several books that people can get to begin reading. And if you have students, really look through Bookshare and look through Learning Ally and even in LS. There are a lot of books addressing social skills and how to survive in college. I'm doing a presentation for something else, and I was looking on websites, and there's a lot of things, really interesting information and resource materials on the websites as well. One of the things that I would like to suggest is that students be very careful about asking people to do things. One of the things, and I know that I fall into that trap and I'm really working on not doing it, is we see somebody and it's like, oh, good, here, can you help me with? And in the beginning, it might be okay, but people get tired of that really quickly. And so we find ourselves with people not wanting to, with people not wanting to be around us, or people avoiding us because we ask a lot of questions. So one of the things that I find to be very important is to really brush up on social skills. And I'm one to talk because my alarm just went off on my phone. Things happen, but we have a little snippet of a I'm going to let Ed tell you why I get it ready.
Okay, we have a something that's from the Perkins School for the Blind, and it's really good. It talks about social skills, but when she's doing that, what I want to do is also talk about individuals who are coming into the community college setting. What I'd like people to do in high school to really do a career assessment. That's real important, and it should be done hopefully maybe in your sophomore year so that you can prepare yourself in your junior and senior year to think about what direction you want to go. Because looking at college and looking for employment really has to start really at the beginning of high school or even sooner. You have to have some kind of idea. Give yourself at least 4, 5, 6 kind of goals that you would like to go into. And one way to do that is to do a self-assessment, and you could do that on the CaliforniaCareerZone.org, and it's CACareerZone.org, all in lowercase. And it's really a very, very good assessment tool. Now, keep in mind, any tool that's going to help a person identify their employment goal is not going to tell you what you can do. I wish there was a tool out there that would, you know, you could take a test and say, okay, this is what you can do. But really, there isn't. Keep in mind also that a lot of the tools out there for career exploration are designed around the general public and really don't focus too much on disability. So when you do these assessments, yes, you're going to come up with the list of, well, okay, I could be a truck driver, I could be an airplane pilot, you know, that kind of stuff. Set those ideas aside, but look into the career that it might suggest being a truck driver. Okay, you can't drive the truck, but maybe you're interested in scheduling. And there are many jobs out there in scheduling transportation trips for delivering goods and services by companies. So that might be something you want to do. But please do that. And then again, while you're in high school, make sure that you request and emphasize that you want orientation mobility, not necessarily on the campus, but learning how to use your mobility skills out in the public. You really want to use those skills to cross streets, catch buses. And that could be done by the school if you request it, and work with the student, work with the mobility instructor on that. Again, you do want to learn how to touch type. And like Christy said, you have to know how to access text materials. Don't assume because you're in high school that once you graduate that this is just going to flow over into the community college, because once you are out of high school, you're on your own. You do have the Department of Oak Rehab to help you out, but even then, you're still on your own, and you can't depend on disabled student services. So you really have to really research and participate in programs that would help you prepare for college. One good program is the STEP program, which is offered through the Junior Blind of America. It's really good. They do have programs up north, so you don't have to, if you're in Southern California, you don't have to think about distance. But again, you could talk to your Voc Rehab counselor about that, because Voc Rehab will sponsor you to attend those programs. That is a really, really good program. The nice thing about that program, the STEP program also, it has Saturday classes throughout the year, and those classes are excellent because all of us who have any kind of intent of going back to school and or are looking for employment and you're young, really need to polish up your skills and look at what's out there so that you know where you're headed. Now, when you finish high school and you're headed for the community college, and hopefully you attend one of the four locations, now granted, don't compete with anybody else but yourself. When you graduate, you may not enter a community college right away, and because it would really be best if you enter one of those four programs. Don't look at your age. Don't look at what other people are doing. Don't look at your classmates that you graduated from and see, hey, well, you know, Sally's going to college, I'm not, and Joe is living in the dorm, I'm not, you know. Set that aside. You're an adult now, and you have to think of as being an adult. So you want to get those skills, attend that program. Yes, it might be a year before you attend a college, a community college, but it's best to get those skills first and then enter the community college. Once you're in the community college now, there's funding available. Granted, the Department of Voc Rehab is going to be there. However, the Department of Voc Rehab also wants you to apply for various programs. You have the Board of Governors grant, generally called the BOG, and that will help you to pay for your tuition. There's a share of cost. Usually it's the health fees, student rep fee, transportation fee in San Bernardino area, and student rep fee. There might be a building fee. There might be a material fee. Those fees can run anywhere between $12 and about $35, $37. If you are working with your Voc Rehab counselor, that counselor will, with you, work in conjunction to pay those fees. And you need to pay those fees. Do not assume that they're going to be paid. And do not ignore contacting your Voc Rehab counselor and register and be in class and then find out midstream that your classes are going to be dropped because you didn't pay those fees. It's very, very important that you keep in communication with your counselor so that those fees can be taken care of. The next area that you might want to consider if you're capable because of your family income is looking at the Pell Grant. Now, if you are 25 and older, the Pell Grant, of course, is going to, if you apply for it, be given to you depending on your income. Everything's designed around the income. If you're under 25, it's going to look at family household income, and it's going to look at your parents' income. So the Pell Grant might be a little more challenging to get, but the Board of Governors grant is what you're going to probably end up with. If you're living on your own, you may qualify for that. Now, of course, if you're on SSI, you will get the BOG grant. If you are an SSI, SSDI, then you possibly may not get the BOG grant, but you might get the Pell Grant. But you really do have to talk to your financial advisor at the community college to find out what grant funding you will receive. Now, of course, I encourage everybody to apply for scholarships. The California Council of Blind offers some tremendous scholarships, and Chris could talk about that too. And those scholarships are not counted toward your Voc Rehab funding. So you really should apply for that. Those scholarships pay for many things that are not covered under the state and federal regulations. And it helps out when you need a book or you need a special item from for your class that you need the money immediately, and the process for getting it from Voc Rehab might take a little bit longer. So that's where the scholarship funds will come in handy. And Christy will talk about that right now.
So a couple of things about scholarships. If you're smart, you will create a generic application. And what you will do on that application for yourself is to, or I would even consider to call it maybe like a little resume, because you're going to gather all the information so that when you go to fill out scholarship applications, you have all that information at your fingertips or on site. And so what you want to do is look online for scholarships. And there are so many scholarships just in the blindness field alone. The ones that I can think of off the top of my head are the AFB scholarships, American Foundation for the Blind, Learning Ally, California Council of the Blind, American Council of the Blind. If you want a scholarship from the National Federation of the Blind, you are required to join. However, they do have scholarships, as well as the National Federation of the Blind of California. If you are a child of a union member, those unions often have scholarships. I know ours does, AFSCME, Local 2620. AFSCME has scholarships. So if our kids went to college when they were teenagers, they could have gotten one. Other organizations, if you've belonged to Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, any kind of service clubs, they have scholarships. If you're Catholic, if you're Italian, if you're left-handed, if you were born in certain states, sometimes the little-known organizations have scholarships as well. I know someone who got a scholarship from a startup foundation in San Bernardino because of being disenfranchised. So that's the kind of homework that needs to be done together with that application, scholarship application resume.
Now, when you are in high school, I highly recommend that you talk to your resource teacher, and or if you don't have a resource, I'm sure you would, though, or talk to a counselor in the high school and ask them about the State Department of Vocational Rehabilitation. Now, that is not an automatic program, so when you graduate from high school, if you haven't contacted the Department of Rehab, we're not going to contact you. You're going to have to contact us. We try to reach out there and reach the students in high school, but again, once you graduate, you're pretty much on your own. You're an adult, so you're going to have to think of what resources are out there. One way to look at funding is just Google. I mean, the systems that we have in our computers now is so wonderful, because if you're not sure what to say, just Google it, and it'll bring up all kinds of listings and go from there. Or ask Siri. I mean, that's tremendous. But let's go back to rehab. So if you're in high school, apply to Department of Voc Rehab. Yes, it does take some paperwork. It does take time, but please apply. Keep in mind that the Department of Voc Rehab is not an entitlement program. You have to be in contact with your counselor. You have to keep the counselor informed. Don't assume because you signed up, you don't have to talk about funding or anything like that. The process is very simple. You do the application along with initial interview. Then from the initial interview, we gather medical information on your disability. Don't assume because you're blind and you've been blind all your life, or if you are applying in midlife that you are blind, that the Department of Rehab has a magic book there that automatically can pull up your records. We have to have signed releases to gather the medical information to support evidence that you have a disability. And you're going to say, well, look, I'm blind, the guy saw me. Well, if we can't keep you in the file cabinet 24/7, and the federal government wants us to have that documentation, because when they audit the cases, they want to say, hey, are you working really with a blind person or not? And that's with any disability. So once we determine that you have a visual impairment, and it's really, really good for the counselor to know what your visual impairment is related to and what your visual acuities are. That helps a lot tremendously, so we understand what you can and can't see and what limitations you have in visual impairment. We might send you to a low vision evaluation and get some low vision aids to help you out. So once you have been determined eligible, you become eligible. That doesn't mean that you're going to receive services. It just means you're eligible. The next process is to get you in a plan. It's an individualized plan, and that is something that you, again, have to think about in high school or think about prior to signing up with the Department of Rehab, and look at your vocational goal. Look at your vocational goal realistically. You really want to consider what is the employment outcome if I go into that field. Let's say you wanted to go into, massage therapy, because a lot of people do massage therapy. Granted, there are a lot of businesses out there that does that employment. However, you have to research and find out what businesses out there will hire a person and where they're located. You don't want to be in an area like Fresno and say you want to be a massage therapist when the need for a massage therapist is probably pretty high because of the population out that way, but people wouldn't necessarily have the money to spend for a massage therapist. If you're in L.A., of course, you want to look at Santa Monica. You want to look at the Hollywood, Pasadena area, Palm Springs area. So you really have to think about where you want to be employed and what is the employment goal to help you there. Now, keep in mind that when you enter college, that because your educational goal is, let's say you wanted to go into history, that is not your vocational goal. So you want to go into history and be a history teacher, or you want to be a researcher. You have to identify what your vocational goal is. So when you're sitting down with your vocational rehabilitation counselor, yes, you want to go to school, but you want to know what your vocational goal, and you don't want to go to school just to go to school. You want to go to school for a purpose and a reason. You do not want to just go to school because that's the thing to do. And you don't want to spend time in school basically wasting time taking classes. You really want to reach your vocational goal. So you do want to make sure that, for instance, I have somebody who wanted to go into sociology, and they said, well, I want to major in sociology. And I said, well, are you going to be a professor? Are you going to be a sociologist? If you want to be a sociologist, you got to find out where you're going to be. But that's an educational goal. And the person was saying, well, I really wanted to do counseling. And I said, well, then now you have to look at, what do you want to do? Do you want to be a social worker? Do you want to work with children and families? There's so many different fields in counseling that you can go into. So again, your vocational goal and your educational goal do have to match. Don't just assume that you have a educational goal, that it's the same as a vocational goal. Now, keep in mind, too, that everybody is employable. Everybody in the whole world is employable. But keep in mind, are you placeable? And that's why we're talking about the skills that you need to be able to be employed. Because you might be employable, but are you going to be placeable? And then you have to look at the skills that you have to have. So now we're going to go into the next section here.
So this thing that we found was actually a video, and unfortunately we're not able to get the Wi-Fi in here to be able to use the presentation. So I recorded it on the Victor stream, and hopefully you guys will be able to hear this. Let me know if you can't.
Hi, my name is Tom Miller. I'm supervisor of the Educational Partnerships Program here at Perkins School for the Blind.
Oh, the mic. No.
Today's webcast is an introduction to a module which is part of a larger book called Welcoming Students with Visual Impairments to Your School. The module we'll be showing today is on social skills. It's a way to look at social skills development for the student with visual impairments and begin to analyze and adapt your activities so that they can learn social skills in an equivalent way to their peers. The objectives of the module enable us to help understand the impact of visual impairment on social skills development. Social skills are things that we take for granted. Very often, social skills seem to be automatic for us. We don't think about them. We look at people sitting in the room, and we look at their body language, and we say, oh, that person seems interested, they're nodding their head. Or we look at the person over here who has their arms crossed, and they're sort of fading to sleep. And we understand that, you know, right away, we have to do something to change the context to reinforce the social skills that, or the interaction, to reinforce the interaction so that we can be more dynamic, hopefully wake that person up and maintain the other person's interest. When you have a visual impairment, these things don't happen automatically. We have what we call a loss of incidental learning, and you'll hear that term a lot during this presentation because it's very important to understand that when we use our vision to monitor our environment, we are doing it automatically. it's cues that we've learned to interpret throughout our lifetime, and now we can do it like that. When you have a visual impairment, you don't pick up on those subtle body language cues, and you lose what's called incidental learning. And we'll try to illustrate that throughout this presentation. It's important to remember that no matter what degree of visual impairment you have, social skills development is going to require direct and effective intervention. One of the key aspects around social skills that can be a problem is that many times, because the student has a visual impairment or some other disability, we lower our expectations. In the area of social skills, we need to have equal expectations for social skills development. We have to realize that their success, or the success of the student with visual impairments later in life, is going to be crucial, or is going to be crucially based upon their ability to interact socially with peers, to interact socially with adults in the workplace, to interact with other people in their environment. There's a wide range of visual impairments, but at any level, visual impairment creates, as I said, a loss of access to incidental learning. Social skills development is a lifelong process, and successful interpersonal relationships are at the core of raising our self-esteem. Think about when you have a positive interaction with someone, how good you feel, all right? If you've gone into a job interview and you're able to express yourself effectively and share your personality and have good body language and good appearance on that job interview, think about how good you feel, sometimes even if you don't get the job. So being successful in interpersonal relationships will raise our self-esteem and also our confidence to take risks. Again, think about a child learning to ride a bike. When they first start out on the bike, they go along and they fall a lot and they feel like a failure. But then all of a sudden they go maybe 5 feet and they don't fall right away. And then they go 10. They become more and more confident in themselves to take a risk. And that's what's important about social skills development. Social skills development is the groundwork which enables us to take risks. The better we feel about ourselves as a person and the better our successes are over time with our friends, with other people in the environment, the more likely we are to take risks and continue to develop socially. Social skills are at the foundation of everything we do. As I said earlier, social skills will support our academic learning, our independent living skills learning, our access to community experiences, relationships, and later on, employment. One of the key questions we have to think about is how did we learn, or how do we continue to learn social skills throughout our lifetime? We need to understand that social skills learning is an ongoing process. The initial bonding between the mother and the child, or the father and the child, is the first step towards social interaction and later social success. As we begin to move along, that we develop that sense of trust in someone, the child knows that they can take a few steps, that they can begin to move away from the parent and begin to understand that they have people in their environment who will support them through social relationships and give them the space to grow and learn. This is what we do throughout our life. Another analogy is later in life when you begin to date. That first date is a social step. It's the opportunity to try and grow into a new relationship, to try and use our skills to form a interaction with another person that maybe will develop into a meaningful friendship or some other significant relationship. The ability to take that step is grounded in your sense of self, your confidence in yourself. It's grounded in your willingness to take risk. And that all that is developed through successful interpersonal relationships throughout our lifetime. Most social skills are learned by repeated visual observation and connecting visual images. It's estimated that 75 to 80% of everything we learn visually. And again, just take a minute to think about this. When you walk into a crowded room, say you're going to a cocktail party, and you walk into a crowded room, how do you decide what group to go over to? That's right. You look around the room, and you begin to think. All right, you begin to think about, well, this group, they're sort of dressed like I am. You know, maybe they'd be a comfortable group to go with. Well, this group over here is laughing really loudly. They seem very animated. Sounds like a good conversation to maybe go listen in on, see if I can become involved. But we do it visually. Yes, you hear them talking, but you scan the room to find out where they are. And then you begin to go into the situation, judging their facial expressions, how they're dressed, and then say, I'll take a risk on this particular group. Other groups you may shy away from, just based upon the fact that maybe they don't look like they're very engaged. Maybe they all stand around just staring at one another, and they're not interacting. And you want to go into a more dynamic relationship. So in that situation, you're reading body language, you're reading facial expression, you're listening to the cues and watching how people are interacting to make a decision. And that's what happens in every one of our social relationships. We interpret the situation based upon what we see, and then we move into the relationship, or we move away from the relationship based upon what we see and what we observe. A student with a visual impairment starts off at a loss, all right? Every task offers them opportunities for social learning, but the social learning must occur in a different way. And there's no better way to illustrate the issue around how vision impacts the loss of these social cues than by showing you a couple of videotape clips. The first videotape clip will start out totally black and move to a low vision scenario. It's a tape of students in a couple of learning environments within a second grade classroom. What you want to do is listen to the tape, watch the tape, and try to jot down what social cues you're picking up from what you hear, what you see, or maybe what you don't see.
Okay, so if you are interested in this and the rest of this, you can go to the Perkins.org website and click on Tom Miller's presentation. And it goes into more depth, which I think is really interesting, and it's too bad they don't have an audio description, because I'm happy about this because it really talks to the non-verbal cues that we don't get. And part of the problem with not receiving these non-verbal cues is that we don't know when our teachers are busy and they don't have, you know, maybe they have a harried look on their faces. Maybe we don't see their body language that they're turning ready to go, and we're asking them questions. So instead of asking, hey, I need help, or can you tell me what this is, or things like that, we can say, is this a good time to talk? Or, I would like some help. Can you give me a time that would be good for you to help me? Or, are you able to help me with such and such now? Or, is there a better time for you? So, there's a lot of different things that we can learn from books, from the podcasts. I'm so jazzed up about being able to use my Victor Stream and my iPhone for looking up all kinds of podcasts on different things. And I think it's really important that when we start interacting with other people in college, in the workplace, that we kind of bone up on our social skills.
Are there any questions at this time? Anybody have any added comments that they would like to add? Yeah, hold on, let me get to you.
Say your name again. Okay,
hi, I'm Amanda Winkler. And to continue on what Christy just said, another thing you should also consider is really getting to know your teachers. Going and scheduling those times to go into their office hours and getting to know them, especially if it's in your major.
Any other comments? Okay. Granted, you know, the philosophy that blindness is an inconvenience, I understand that. And that, you know, we need to blend into the sighted community. I understand that too. However, we are blind, and unfortunately, the remaining probably close to 98% of the world is sighted. So we do have to work with that sighted field, and we do have to understand what they are looking at as us, as people who are legally blind or totally blind. So as a high school student said, well, okay, fine, you know, my parents let me do this and do that, but I really don't go to the dances, I don't go to the football games, I don't go to the school activities because I don't want to go into the area, there's too many kids there, I might bump into them. Those are the challenges that you have to take as a student to put you in that uncomfort zone. Go do those things because that's where you're going to learn how to interact with a sighted world. You're not going to learn it by sitting home. You're not going to learn it by reading a book. You're going to have to get out there and do it. Granted, read the material. And I want you to also look at this presentation by Tom Miller through Perkins because it's a really, really good presentation that he has. And unfortunately, we can't listen to the whole thing because it takes too long. But it's really a good presentation. But you have to get out there and interact with your sighted community, your sighted friends, and be more active. Put yourself in that zone that you're uncomfortable with. Get out there and cross those streets. Get out to the mall and go shopping on your own. Go to the grocery store. Those are the things that will help you learn how to interact with the sighted community. Now, you also have other opportunities to be involved. Get involved with a chapter, an organization of the blind, because coming to the California Council of the Blind conference is a good way to build those social skills. A really unique and wonderful way because everybody here is blind or legally blind. They don't care if you're lost. They'll help you out. You know, you get the hotel staff to help you out. This is a good place to really work on interacting with other people. Granted, you're going to be with other blind people, but it still helps build your confidence so that if you have to go to a church organization or a church meeting or a retreat or something like that, you can do it. You don't have that fear because you tried it out here. So if you're a young student, get involved with your school, get involved with any kind of organization in the school. If you're an adult, get involved with your church organization, get involved with organization of the blind. Just get involved, really get involved. If you're at a community college, don't be afraid to get involved with some of the activities that they have there too as well so that you can interact. Because finding employment really is built on not how much knowledge you have, but what your skills are in interacting with the rest of the general population.
It is often said that it's not what you know, it's who you know as to how you get a job. And that is actually true because when we network, we are opening and broadening our base. And so if you just fill out an application and you turn in 100 applications, but you don't have any reference or any letter or any person who can vouch for you, you're probably not going to get picked up. If you have someone who you're networking with and says, oh, we have job openings in this department, we have job openings at this place, that same person is going to go and tell his or her supervisor, hey, you know, I got this person that's really awesome and, you know, a sharp person who is a self-starter and can really get, you know, benefit us by hiring this person. Who do you think is going to get the job? So by being involved in activities, by being, you know, even if you join a book club, even if you join a choir, if you join a chess club, a computer club, it really does help. The more we are able to branch out and communicate with others, the better it's going to be for us. I am losing my assistant, and I'm really pushing for this other person to get the job because I know her, because I know her work. I know what she's done. So I'll tell you in the saga next year whether or not she got the job.
So it's really important that you work on your social skills, and it's a daily process. Don't think because, okay, I'm getting around, I'm okay, I'm traveling, I use the bus. Being blind, being legally blind, it's a daily process. I could be placed in a situation, I have many times, going to an uncomfortable location because there's going to be a meeting there, and they want me to speak, and I go there, and I feel really uncomfortable because, okay, I'm legally blind. I could see quite a bit, but I can't recognize people's faces from a distance. Unless I get to the understanding of my environment, the whole place is really foreign to me. And, until you get the hang of where things are, yeah. But today's comfortable. But there have been places that I have been that I really feel uncomfortable. And that happens all the time. Whether you're blind, legally blind, or sighted, it's going to happen. I know people who are sighted who feel uncomfortable going to places because they feel uncomfortable in that environment. They don't like crowds, or they don't know anybody, or they don't like driving there. Lucky them. So that's the whole idea, is that it's a constant, ongoing process of learning to be social, interactive with our community that's out there. If anybody has any questions, please let me know. Otherwise, or comments, added comments, I'd be glad to add to it because this is real important.
Yeah, I'll talk in the mic. Just as a brief comment, working with high school students, we've developed a really good relationship with our performing arts department, especially with our drama. And this year we have a student, he had a full slew of academic classes, wasn't doing so hot in chemistry, and really didn't need chemistry. And we said, hey, Mr. Zalme, do you have a spot in drama for him? And it's been a real blessing for him because it's pushed him, he's total, and it's pushed him out of his envelope to really get out there, engage with socially. He gets to mix with the rest of the school body besides just academic classes and just besides coming in the resource. He gets out there, gets to know a lot of the people. And plus, I've developed some good relationships with the teachers, as you guys were talking about, going to the office hours in college, is that encouraging them to engage with the students that, hey, it's not just him and the aide in the back. It's, you know, we'll pull him into the crowd. So it's been a lot of success this last year or last few years. Just wanted to comment on getting out.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, this is Richard. Two things I want to share. And this isn't really so much a plug, but it may sound like it. What Junior Blind Step program that you mentioned, Ed, earlier. In order to really challenge our students, one of the initiatives we're doing this year is putting the STEP workshops in the community. In fact, this weekend you'll see 22 of our students here at the conference, so we're using the conference as a backdrop for first impressions, a networking workshop. So when we meet with them tomorrow night, we're going to give them kind of the ground rules that you're going to have to meet X amount of people and let us know who they were on Sunday and really hold them accountable. And then as we do Saturday with some of the folks who are going to be speaking to our students, asking them questions of their professional work experience, and really getting them positive exposure to the field. So we use conferences like this, and to be fair, conferences such as the NFB, to let students know informed choice, what's out there, who can they network with, And all of the workshops going forward will be community-based. We no longer have a building in Los Angeles to house our students, so we won't have a residential component. So it'll be in hotels, in hostels, and next summer we're looking at college campuses to house the SEP program. So it's really going to really notch it up a little bit for the community engagement and challenge them, challenge their curiosity, and get out of their comfort zone. So it's kind of a new approach we're starting this fall. The second thing I want to mention is all about networking. Okay, the second thing is all about networking is knowing your resources. And many years ago, you may have heard of a resource called Access, which was published by CTEBVI or CTEBVH at the time. That publication is actually coming back through a consortium of myself, a DOR counselor in the Sacramento area, and the accessibility consultant, assistive technology consultant for the Department of Education in Sacramento. And we're putting our resources together, and we've built Access up from the ground up, and it's over 300 pages, and we had a lot of professional people look at it. So that's going to be published online soon. But the original intent of that resource was for high school seniors who are visually impaired to learn what's out there through their IEPs and through their teachers, giving them that print publication. This will be a web resource only, and we hope to have a host for it very soon, but it'll be a very invaluable free resource. So I just want to throw that out there, Ed.
Do you want to speak in the mic? Are you fine? No, okay. Anyhow, thank you much. And this kind of wraps up this session. And again, for those out there who are in school, high school, please, please get yourself involved with your high school. Get yourself involved with Volk Rehab. Really attend one of those four training centers. Get involved with the STEP program and really get your skills up, because it's a real challenge being in college nowadays, because the standards are getting higher, the competition is getting higher, the requirement for high grades to enter even just into a four-year college is getting more competitive. I know people who have not been able to get into a four-year college because of their GPA being low. So you really, really have to work on those skills. And Christy has, yes.
I know this might be viewed as a double-edged sword, but can you, as a rehab counselor, tell us what you hope or what you know about WIOA and how it'll help transition-age youth?
WIOA is basically part of the Rehabilitation Act, and basically what it is going to do is really focus on employment, and it's touching the youth in earlier than high school. We're trying to reach people who are 14 to 16 years old, younger, because we're finding that people with disabilities who are really severely disabled are having a difficult time finding employment. The unemployment rate in general is about 70%. I think it's probably about 75-80%, because it's really, really high. We're finding this, you know, the federal government and, of course, state rehab is finding that people who, especially young people, are not being employed. We do not want to see people on SSI the entire life. Granted, folks, that money is there. That's an entitlement through Social Security. However, I do not want to see people on SSI who are capable of working, who are capable of being trained, to remain on SSI the rest of their life. It's not a way to earn a living. The cost of living is really high. Rent is high. It's just difficult. And if you're living at home, that, you know, I mean, it's safe. You have a roof over your head. Your parents have a home. If they have purchased their home, more than likely you're going to be there the rest of your life. However, think about that. Is that something you really want to do? So the federal government really is pushing towards getting young people with disabilities and getting them trained and getting them to think about employment. And we're starting at an earlier age, and it's really a good program. We are really trying to focus on training and getting people to look at employment.
I want to also mention the Hadley School for the Blind. There is such a wealth of information and classes. Right now, I just or online, went online, and I signed up for a course in UEB. And the United English Braille is going to start being used in January of 2016. And I, as a part of what I've been doing in my work, have been teaching Braille to a couple of patients who are blind at Patton State Hospital. And so I got into the thing of, okay, what's the new Braille going to look like? So I went on and signed up for that course, and less than a week later, I got the book. And they're also offering professional credits. So they have several different programs through Hadley School for the Blind. If any of you have listened to any of their podcasts, they're very good. And I'm really, really hoping that the word about Hadley School for the Blind will get out. So if you haven't gone on their website, find them. Go on the website, look at the classes, look at the podcasts. There's really so much out there. And that will help also. I think they have a lot on social skills and living independently and, like I said, Braille and iOS and different things like that.
To follow up on what was asked about WIOA, mark your time and calendar, because on Friday at 1:40, the Workforce and Innovation and Opportunity Act is going to be presenting. And for those who are really interested in employment, please listen to that presentation. It's going to really give you a lot of insight on the direction of vocational rehabilitation and helping people consider looking at employment. It's going to be here, yes, at the convention tomorrow. I just wanted to bring that up because there is going to be a good presentation done on that from the Department of Voc Rehab. All right, any other questions, comments? Thank you for attending. I really appreciate it and giving me your support. Thank you.